Hi, thank you for tuning in to this week's edition of Natural Health. I'm Ann Mihalik, your volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Happy February, by the way. For this week's program, I have selected a number of articles from the January-February 2020 issue of Eating Well, Ingredients for the Good Life. The first article is entitled Resolved, and it is about making your New Year's resolutions stick. The second article is entitled, How I Ditched Dieting for Good. And the last article is The Power of Pie. So let's get started with Resolved. This new science-backed method will make your January 1st goals stick this year. Seriously, by Jessica Magala. Hey, we've been there. You're jazzed about your New Year's resolutions for all of 2 weeks, but this time around will be different. Instead of aiming for perfection, recent research suggests that deciding ahead of time how you'll pivot if one step doesn't go as planned may be the secret to success. Scientifically speaking, this is part of an approach called systems improvement. In a study published in the journal Nursing Outlook, being prepared for this trial and error helped people reach their goals, like eating healthier or exercising more, unlike programs that rely on motivation or willpower. Here's how to make it work for you. The Basic Blueprint. Study co-author Shirley Moore, PhD RN of Case Western Reserve University, says to draw what's called a fishbone diagram. We've illustrated a veg-forward take on it above with tips from Carrie Gans, MSRD, author of The Small Change Diet, but you can use the approach for any resolution. This visualization tool helps you brainstorm multiple strategies. Write your health goal at the head and fill in specific steps to achieve it off the spine. There are no wrong answers, and more is better. Next, choose one strategy to start with. 1. Going for extra credit defeats the purpose of the exercise and can set you up for failure. As you test it, out for 2 to 4 weeks, track your progress to see if it's working or if it's time to move on to a different step. That's the benefit of having a whole list of things to try, says Moore. And no demerits for changing course early if you realize on day one that your pick isn't working for you. If you have at least a partial success, say you were aiming for 3 servings a day of veggies but got in 2, then add another item from the list. Why it works. When you give yourself permission to make mistakes and try a new strategy when needed, there's no pressure to be perfect, Moore explains. You learn to focus on what you can accomplish versus what you can't. You're able to simply move on to the next thing rather than feel like a failure and get totally derailed. So in this chart, they have a list that says chop once, eat many times. For example, chop an entire cuke, throw half in a salad, and store the rest for snacks. And then take 1 day a week to make batches of 3 types of roasted veggies to store in the fridge and enjoy over the course of the week. And then prep veggies for snacks immediately after you shop, before they go into the refrigerator. And then keep your freezer and pantry stocked with frozen or canned produce so you'll always have something on hand, even in a pinch. And add bonus veggies to meats you already cook, such as tossing spinach into jarred sauce on pasta night. And when you meal plan, either for the day, a few days, or the week, think about the vegetable element first. And lastly, place veggie snacks and leftovers in clear containers front and center in the fridge so you'll see them every time you open the door. And all of those things were for the goal of eating at least 3 servings of vegetables a day. The second article is entitled, How I Ditched Dieting for Good. There's a reason intuitive eating is trending right now. It may be an even more effective way to lose weight, boost body image, and learn to stop judging foods as good or bad. Food is food. It's okay to love it all. By Lynn Curry. It's fair to say it was Whole30 that broke me. but it could have been intermittent fasting, South Beach, The Zone, clean eating, or any of the many diets I've tried, from Weight Watchers during high school to five-day detoxes in my 40s. Year in and year out, I followed all their rules without questioning why I was always on a new wellness plan to shed the same damn 15 pounds. In the spring of 2018, on my third round of Whole 30, I hit a wall on day six. Suddenly, banning chickpeas and brown rice seemed ludicrous to me. I adore them, along with bread and pasta, preferably with wine, also verboten. And I worried what messages my two adolescent daughters were absorbing as I spooned bolognese sauce over a baked sweet potato while they ate it on spaghetti. None of it made sense anymore. Kara Harbstreet, MSRD, gets this a lot. As the founder of Street Smart Nutrition in Kansas City, she works to help jaded dieters find a better approach to eating. Diets rarely deliver the results you want them to, and there's a growing backlash, she told me. So many people, like me, have recognized that dieting only succeeds in making us feel like failures. They're rejecting those rigid plans and embracing a radically different type of undiet, intuitive eating, sometimes referred to as mindful eating. Surveys show that interest in intuitive eating has more than doubled in the past 5 years and continues to rise. During that same time frame, there's also been a steady decline in the number of Americans who care about dieting, from 67% to 49%. Despite its trending status, intuitive eating is not some newfangled idea. Two California nutritionists, Evelyn Tribol, MSRDN, and Elise Resch, MSRDN, developed the concept 25 years ago, back when Atkins was all the rage. But their method has clearly struck a cultural chord. How it works, rather than offering meal plans or lists of foods to eat and avoid, it rests on 10 principles that encourage you to ditch the diet mentality, make peace with food, trust your hunger cues, and allow yourself to enjoy what you crave. No guilt allowed. Food is not to be feared or labeled as good or bad, and you are not good or bad because of what you choose to put in your mouth. Instead, the idea is to follow your innate ability to self-regulate food intake, the one most of us are born with, yet tend to ignore or override at some point in our lives. Proponents of intuitive eating will tell you that weight loss is not the goal, but for many people, it's a happy side benefit. A study published in the journal Eating and Weight Disorders, for example, found that intuitive eaters consumed fewer calories of a pasta meal they were provided and had lower BMIs compared to dieters. Research has discovered other advantages as well, including better body image, fewer food cravings, less weight yo-yoing, and a greater ability to maintain a healthy weight over time. I first read about this no-diet way of life after my Whole30 debacle. I was primed to jump off the merry-go-round of dieting, restricting, and poor self-image. One day on the beach, I watched a woman in her 40s walk by, rocking an emerald bikini. I wondered, what would it be like to feel that comfortable in your own skin, regardless of what you actually look like? At that moment, I realized that intuitive eating made more sense than any 30-day wellness plan, but I worried how it would work in real life. It felt like the nutritional equivalent of base jumping. Would I free fall straight into obesity? I was scared. Food, or at least certain foods, was something I had learned to fear. How would I know what, how, and when to eat if there were no rules, no safety net? It doesn't have to be super complicated. It just takes a lot of mindfulness, Lara Pence, PSYD, assured me. She's a clinical psychologist who specializes in food and body acceptance issues. In her view, permission to eat simply replaces restrictions with options. Although she noted that intuitive eating doesn't work for everyone, like athletes or those with certain medical conditions, Pence suggested I ask myself, what am I looking for right now? What do I truly want? An intuitive eater includes foods that feel the most satisfying and shifts away from those that don't. Of course, this permission could also be used as an excuse to down a dozen donuts or to eat to cover up your emotions, she said. So honest self-reflection is essential. I've got this, I thought during those early days. I am a kale, avocado, and wild salmon lover, and I felt confident making nutritious choices for myself. Before reaching for food, I took stock of my hunger level, and, like deciding what outfit to put on, I considered, would yogurt and fruit feel good right now, or do I need a cheese omelet? But it's a lot to unlearn and relearn after years of self-denial, and I soon found myself falling back into sneaky dieting habits. Although I wasn't counting calories or macros, I became a careful eater. Subconsciously, I was trapped in the clean eating mindset, restricting myself to only whole, organic, and unprocessed foods. To be clear, whole, organic, and unprocessed foods are amazing. The problem is the restricting part. Setting something up as clean paints the alternative as dirty or bad or wrong, explained Christy Harrison, MPHRD, author of Anti-Diet. And that's just another form of the food police. To embrace this way of life, I had to soften my black and white thinking. There's room for salmon, kale, and corn chips in a healthy diet. Have faith, Harrison said, because our worst fear about intuitive eating, that we'll lose control, especially around forbidden foods, is unfounded. It's actually dieting that causes people to have trouble with overindulging. A study published in the journal Eating Behaviors found that restrictive eating led to food obsessions, overeating, and binging on bad foods. It's a psychological fact that when people slip on a strict diet, they often feel like they might as well go out with a bang. Intuitive eating, however, had the opposite effect on all of these factors. While I'll never look at Fritos the same way as a piece of fruit, I stopped demonizing foods. And I found that when I allowed myself to have peanut M&Ms, I would have a few, not the whole bag, and move on to other things. I felt a giant sense of success and relief at no longer being captive to my own cravings. It was more addictive, in the best way, than chocolate. From then on, eating became less preoccupying and stressful, and I was less hyper-conscious about my choices, whether at home or dining out. I focused on nourishing myself, and I abandoned old habits like skipping lunch and later feeling so lightheaded and famished that I would scarf cheese and crackers. I slowed down during meals, even on busy work days, and as a result, I felt more satisfied afterward. When the holidays came, cheating was no longer a thing in my life. I sampled the sugar cookies I baked with my daughters, sipped cocktails with my husband, and rang in New Year's Day with a sourdough waffle. Did I worry that I would gain weight? Sure, but I let those thoughts drift by. I didn't let them snowball into anxiety that if I had a slice of pie with whipped cream, I wouldn't be able to stop. Just the opposite happened. I usually wanted just a bite of dessert, if I wanted any at all. Even when I did indulge in all the festivities, it didn't mean that I'd fallen off the deep end with no way back, and I applied the gold standard intuitive eating advice. If you don't love it, don't eat it. And if you love it, savor it. To social situations, from dinner with friends to a family trip to Spain in the spring, ham, bread, and wine were staples during that month of travel. But as wonderful as they were, I found myself yearning for a salad too. Even the way I meal planned for my family changed. Before intuitive eating, I consciously excluded any weeknight dinners containing carbs, or I substituted approved foods for myself. Now it was more enjoyable, since my chief concern was making simple, balanced meals, even when a time crunch meant quesadillas for everyone. I ate the bolognese as it was meant to be, with the pasta. I might just want a small bowl of it. I might be hungry enough for seconds. The tricky thing with talking about intuitive eating is that most of what changes is internal. The actions that we take may look strikingly similar to when we were dieting, Harb Street told me. The primary difference is just the mindset and the motivation behind those behaviors. This mindset shift went not only for food choices, but also for body image. One of the tenets of intuitive eating is to accept your genetics with the same detachment as your shoe size. I won't pretend it was easy to abandon the idea that my health and self-worth were directly tied to the 3 digits on the scale, but at the gym, I stopped choosing the fat-burning setting on the Stairmaster, and I moved my goals away from losing weight and toward training for activities I love, trail running, hiking, and backcountry skiing. Gradually, my self-talk changed too. I purposefully banished negative thoughts about my arm fat or the width of my hips, and instead focused on how good it felt to be strong and fit. You truly may never reach a point where you can say, I love my body and accept it wholeheartedly. And that's fine, Harbstreet said, but you can appreciate what your body does for you and provide it with what it needs. As imperfect and uneven as this journey has been, it's made such a difference in my life. 1 year later, I feel better in my body than I have since I was mountain climbing every weekend in my 20s, and I have lost 15 pounds, although I wouldn't attribute it solely to intuitive eating. The most significant change, though, is that I don't waste mental energy agonizing over food or my body size anymore. Do I still stress eat potato chips sometimes? Yes. But I don't guilt myself or promise to make up for it. All I know is that the undieting lifestyle is so much richer than I could have imagined. And I'm not just talking about the brownies and wine. On vacation this past summer, I rocked my tankini simply because I feel more comfortable in my own skin and treat myself with kindness on most days. After the beach, when my daughters asked to stop at the ice cream stand, I paused to decide if I wanted a scoop or not. Either way, we would sit together under the summer sun with damp hair and sandy feet. I watched them happily spoon ice cream into their mouths, and we savored the experience of it all. That's what I call real food freedom. And tucked within this article are 4 little articles that are all related, of course. How to eat intuitively is the first one. Here are the basic principles of intuitive eating. And can we just say these are our kind of ground rules? If you really want to delve into the specifics, it's worth consulting a nutritionist or one of the many books on the subject, like Christy Harrison's Anti-Diet or the OG tome Intuitive Eating by Evelyn Tribole and Elise Resch. First, forget diets, full stop. The vast majority are dumb and don't work long term. Next, hungry? Then eat something. Don't wait until you're so ravenous you could eat the tablecloth. Next, stop labeling foods as good or bad. Amen to that. Next, ditch the guilt. Challenge any judgy thoughts that bubble up, like feeling bad for eating that third slice of pizza. Next, tune in to hunger cues. When you're comfortably full but not stuffed, set the fork down. Next, really enjoy your food. Eating slowly and savoring every bite boosts the satisfaction factor, so you may not need as much. Next, avoid eating your feelings. Find other ways to tackle emotions like stress, boredom, and sadness. Go for a walk. Call your mom. Next, be kind to your body. Not always easy, but it helps to focus on what it's capable of versus what size or shape it is. Next, exercise. Not to fit into your skinny jeans, but because it makes you feel healthy, strong, and energized. And lastly, eat what makes you feel good. You don't need to eat healthy foods 100% of the time. It's about making nutritious choices overall that support your well-being. Next little article inside this one is called 4 Benefits of This Un-Diet. If intuitive eating sounds too good to be true, know that there's science showing that, yes, it really can work. The most notable perks. 1. Healthier weight. Adults who learned intuitive eating practices lost, on average, nearly 7 pounds in just 2 months, according to a small 2019 study from the University of Salzburg. Not all of the research has yielded such dramatic results, however. Another study in the journal Eating Disorders found that intuitive eaters generally reported no weight loss over the course of a year, but they did have less weight gain and yo-yo dieting over time than restrained eaters, you know, those following a capital D diet. The researchers note that while a strict diet mindset may initially lead to weight loss, it doesn't keep the pounds off in the long run like intuitive eating can. 2. Fewer cravings. It's such a dietary catch-22. When you tell yourself you shouldn't eat something, it causes you to obsess over it and want it that much more. And research shows that restrained eaters are more likely to experience these types of cravings. Intuitive eating has the opposite effect. In the University of Salzburg study, participants who learned intuitive eating saw their scores on a cravings questionnaire drop by nearly 50%, while those who didn't follow this practice had no change in their scores. One key reason, when you no longer deprive yourself of anything and all foods are on the table, you're less tempted by the food, by the stuff that was formerly forbidden. 3. Savvier noshing habits. Plenty of messages in our environment can trick you into eating more than you mean to. A particularly sneaky one is healthy packaging claims. Turns out, restrained eaters, who allow external cues to dictate what and how much to eat, are far more likely to fall prey to this kind of marketing because they pay more attention to what the bag is telling them. Healthy, keep going. While intuitive eaters listen more to what their bodies are saying, I've had enough, according to University of Toronto researchers. And 4, better body image. An Australian study found that intuitive eaters had higher body appreciation regardless of their perceived flaws. The researchers explain that when you value your body, you're more likely to listen to what it's telling you to eat. And it works in the other direction, too. The more you use your hunger intuition, the more you come to appreciate your body for being so smart at figuring this stuff out on its own. And the last little article inside this article is a Q&A. Are intuitive eating and mindful eating the same thing? Technically, no, although the two terms are often used interchangeably. Mindful eating is a practice that comes from Zen Buddhism and shares some characteristics with intuitive eating, such as non-judgment and really being present when you eat. But while all intuitive eating can be mindful, not all mindful eating is intuitive, says Harbstreet. It's impossible, for example, to eat mindfully but still restrict what or how much you eat. Oh, there you are, diet mindset. Plus, it's hardly realistic to be 100% mindful at every single meal. Intuitive eating allows for situations when you're attending to other people or wrapped up in a conversation, and it can be a sign of progress whenever you allow things other than the food to take center stage in your life. The author of this article, Lynn Curry, is an Oregon-based food writer and author of a grass-fed beef cookbook called Pure Beef. And the last article I've selected for today's edition of Natural Health is called The Power of Pie. Activist Rose McGee celebrates Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday by baking pies that bring her community together, by Julie Kendrick. In 2020, McGee will visit historically black colleges and universities across the country to work toward her goal of building racial unity. The motivation. As she watched television coverage of the 2014 shooting of Michael Brown Jr., the young black man killed by a white police officer in Ferguson, Missouri, Rose McGee felt heartbreak, despair, and a gnawing feeling that there was nothing she could do to help. Then the resident of Golden Valley, Minnesota, says she heard a voice telling her, "Go bake some pies and take them down there." Baking is second nature to McGee, who used to sell her signature sweet potato pies, which she calls the sacred dessert of black culture, at the Minneapolis Farmers Market. So she baked 30 pies, drove more than 500 miles to Ferguson, and hand-delivered them to protesters. McGee recalls the reaction of one grieving pie recipient. First, the woman was skeptical. Then she cried tears of joy. What she did. Back in Golden Valley, McGee called up the mayor to discuss the healing power pie could have on her own community. And her annual sweet potato comfort pie event was born. The goal, build racial unity through giving and receiving pies. On the Saturday before Martin Luther King Jr. Day, McGee and 50-plus volunteers bake sweet potato pies, one for every year since Dr. King's birth. This year, they'll bake 91 pies. The next day, she leads the community, a mix of students, civic groups, law enforcement officers, and more, in a small group discussion around race in which they determine who will get the honor of receiving a pie. Why it's cool. Past pie recipients have included firefighters, teachers, healthcare workers, members of racial justice organizations, and mayors of St. Paul and Minneapolis. Scott Charlesworth Seiler, a fourth grade teacher in North Minneapolis, was gifted a pie in the middle of class. Our school is primarily African American, so my students immediately understood that particular pie as a symbol of family and celebration, he says. McGee, who continues to hand deliver pies across the country in response to incidences of racial violence, knows food is a great unifier. She says creating, gathering, and giving these pies away is a powerful experience. And you guessed it, we're coming up to the end of today's program. Before I leave, I need to tell you the answer to last week's riddle, which was: a horse is on a 24-foot chain and wants an apple that is 26 feet away. How can the horse get to the apple? Well, the answer is, he walks to it because the chain is not attached to anything. Next week's riddle: if a blue house is made out of blue bricks, a yellow house is made out of yellow bricks, and a pink house is made out of pink bricks, what is a greenhouse made of? And that is all the time we have for today's edition of Natural Health. I'm Ann Mihalik, your volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Make sure you remember that if you missed any part of today's program or you want to listen to past programs, you can access this program and many others on demand at sunsounds.org. Then you click Broadcast Info and Audio, then the On Demand Podcasts tab, and then select Natural Health under the Health category, any other program you may be interested in. Thanks again for tuning in, and be sure to stay tuned for more great programming. Bye for now.